Whether it's checking in, delivering food, or dropping off room service, all the jobs at this hotel are being provided by robots and face-scanning computers.
I'm here in Hangzhou, China. Behind me is the country's first future hotel. It's by internet giant Alibaba. And the company says they want to drastically cut the cost of human labour using robots and face-scanning. The idea is that if guests don't want to interact with another human, they don't have to.
Bookings opened just last month and it's already attracted a lot of attention online. Many people are coming for a peek at what the future hotel is like, and rooms start from roughly $205 a night.
With more people flying than ever, the aviation industry is booming. But there's one big problem in keeping up with passenger demand. There's a global shortage of pilots fit to take you from point A to B. So to fill those cockpits, U.S. airlines like United are aggressively recruiting military helicopter pilots.
First of all, the division is there, and whatever we do, the country to a degree is going to be divided, and probably quite fundamentally divided, because there are just completely two different futures on offer for the British people. But funnily enough, I think if you have another referendum, it really will bring closure. People like myself accept if the country votes to leave again, that's it.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is January 28, 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day and another business week getting underway. It is going to be a busy morning this morning if you're in Chicago and the Chicago area. Bad weather, some heavy snow falling this morning. We'll keep you posted on the weather, and Mary will be along in just a few more minutes with more traffic information this morning. The news coming up again at the bottom of the hour, so we'll keep you covered on the weather. School closings as well today. WGNradio.com website, just navigate over to the Emergency Closing Center. You can find those and all of the latest weather information on the program this morning. CEO Spotlight this morning, Gail Babbitt is here. She's the CEO of Cedar Electronics. You probably know that company best by its brands, Cobra Radios, CB Radios, Escort Radar Detectors, and Dash Cams. We'll bring in Gail momentarily. A little bit later in the program, John Gramlich will be here from the Pew Research Center. We'll talk about violence in the U.S. Do the stats show that the tide is changing? That'll be coming up at about 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the opening bell rings for the first time this week after stocks closed out Friday in positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 184 points higher. The S&P climbed about 22. The NASDAQ rose about 91. This morning, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, with Dow futures off nearly 0.5%, S&P futures off more than 0.5%, NASDAQ futures off more than 0.5% as well. And in Europe, markets are generally lower. You heard there in the opening montage, Tony Blair, the former prime minister of Great Britain, talking about perhaps another referendum on Brexit in the UK. The FTSE in London is off about 0.25%. The DAX and the CAC are lower by about 0.33% to 0.5%. Markets are mixed in Asia, and oil is trading at $52.68 a barrel, down nearly a dollar. You know the company behind brands like Cobra CB Radios and Escort Radar Detectors and Dash Cams? It's Chicago-based Cedar Electronics, a leading global supplier of mobile and consumer products. And CEO Gail Babbitt is with us in our CEO Spotlight this morning. Gail, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Steve, thanks for having me.
We welcome you here after a successful appearance, I think, at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Lots going on. But let's talk first about your relatively new appointment as CEO of Cedar Electronics. Tell us about the company and tell us about you a little bit.
Yeah, Steve, great question. A lot of people ask. So I've been in the C-suite of companies now going on 19 years, so very familiar with leading companies. And I am traditionally in companies that require some change management, so they're trying to evolve. And so this is a little different of a role. I've been running finance, running operations, so now to actually be in the CEO role, mm-hmm. it's exciting. A little nervous. Mm-hmm. a little nervous in every new role, because I take my role leading a company very seriously. I'm brought in to help a company evolve and change and get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do the right thing. I want to do the right thing for customers, for business partners, whether they're suppliers, customers, for our employees, for our owners. And so I take doing a good job seriously.
Cedar Electronics is the umbrella company or the parent company of some brands that people probably are familiar with. There's the Cobra brand, a couple of others. Tell us about those other brands and the company itself.
Yeah, it's a great question. So a lot of people are familiar with one or a couple of our brands, but don't know that we're actually one family of brands or a company. So under Cedar, in the U.S., most people know our Cobra brand, primarily for our CB radios.
Mm-hmm.
We also have marine radios. We have a power assortment, which means jump starters and power inverters. We have dash cameras, and we have radar detectors. And then we have the Escort brand in the U.S., which is Escort radar, and this year we actually unveiled a new dash camera. But if you go outside of the U.S., we, in addition to Cobra and Escort radar, we have Snooper, and we also have Beltronics.
Yeah, and the Snooper brand overseas, I went to the website there. It's just about every possible electronic technical gadget you would need for being on the road, for truckers, for communication. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just a wide variety of products there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. So if you think about, you know, what is the mission of our company? So it's really about providing products to drivers that give them information and awareness. So that's whether it's a passenger car, whether it's a trucker, whether it's a boater. And so in the Snooper array, you see it all really full throttle, because it also expands to personal navigation devices. So we don't really sell those here in the U.S. under Cobra or Escort, but we do in really in Europe under Snooper.
I want to get into some more of the technology later, but you mentioned you're taking over as CEO, and let us try to get into what that's like. I mean, you talked about the challenge of coming into a new company. What do you do first after you're named CEO of a company like Cedar?
Yeah, great question. So the advantage is I was already at Cedar for 6 months. So we were already starting some of the evolution. And I would say one of my strengths is I can define a strategic vision, which is going back to basics. And it creates a focal point that everyone inside of the company can understand. What are we trying to accomplish? And so for us, going back to basics was, how do we make sure that we're selling our products the right way to the right partners that represent our brands right? And then how do we make sure that when we do products, we really lean into our strengths? So what is the strength of this business? What was appealing to me even in my prior role as the CFO and COO? And it was, these brands are iconic. They've been around for a long time, and we've always been known for good quality products. And that's what we're going to maintain. So how do we make sure that we make decisions for consumers? We listen to what people want and really narrow down the breadth of our products. And I don't mean product categories, I mean product choices. So we help consumers make good decisions and ensure that we maintain the quality that we've done for years.
For consumers, brand loyalty is a big thing. And I would imagine the same holds for people who are Cobra and Escort customers. They've probably used some sort of Cobra product for their entire lives. They recommend that to other people. But how challenging is it to introduce new products to that customer base? And how do you even begin to, let's say, somebody has a Cobra radar detector. How do you get them to get the camera, to buy the camera for their car?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you know, we are lucky that we have such a loyal following of customers. And consumers really value our brands because of the quality. And it really comes down to understanding what a consumer wants and needs. So I don't view our role as how do we push products on consumers. It's how do we hear what we can provide that helps our consumers, so someone who's driving a vehicle, have better data and information to have more awareness of what's around them. And as long as our products are doing that, and it's something a consumer wants, they'll know that when they buy our brands, it's a brand they can trust.
So what would you say is the hottest of the products at your company right now?
Yeah. So the two things. One thing that's always hot for us is our radar detectors. It's a lucky position we're in that we've been the industry leader for so long, both Escort and Cobra, and it provides a diverse array of products, both on price and features, between our Escort and our Cobra products. They will continue to be strong. Our engineers and our product team do a great job of really hearing what consumers want and staying at the forefront. And now we're starting to lean a lot more into dash cameras. And our dash cameras are really starting to sell, because consumers are starting to realize to have something as video evidence of things that happen with your vehicle, to be able to, number one, be able to watch, but also to be able to distribute, is going to grow more and more as the years go on.
And that has been a phenomena that we're kind of slow to catch up to in the United States, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there are some foreign countries in Europe, in Russia, where this has been going on for a long time, where people have these cameras. So this is a nice ripe market for that, isn't it?
It is. So in some of the countries in Europe, the penetration rates are up to 25 and 30% as far as people that drive vehicles that have dash cameras. In the U.S., we're at about 1%. So we are later to the game, and we have a lot of opportunity to grow. So we're leaning more into our dash cameras because we think it actually helps protect drivers. We find drivers drive differently when they know that there's a dash camera there. You also can find some evidence. So if there's a traffic accident that happens, you now have video proof that you can share with your insurance company to protect you.
Yeah. Or you catch the errant meteorite that happens to go over the highway.
Exactly.
Right. Let's go back to CES 2019, the Consumer Electronics Show. You had a pretty good showing there. You were there to unveil some new things. Talk to us about that a little.
Yeah, it was a great showing. CES is always amazing. And for this year at CES, there were two things that were our primary focus. One is we unveiled our Escort Live 2.0, so the updated app for Escort Radar. And it really is to try to give more information and alerts to drivers. And you probably hear a theme. Everything is about data, information. How do we keep users of our products more informed and aware of what's around them when they're in their vehicles? And that can be a passenger car. It could be a truck. And we also do have products for boats. So it's all about awareness and safety. So we unveiled that new app. The second thing, which we actually received an honorable mention, we actually had submitted one of our new products, a category that a lot of people don't know we're in, which is jump starters. And so a jump starter, you know, a lot of people in the old day think about the old, you know, cables for how you jump start a car. Well, a lot of times there's not someone else there to help jumpstart your car, so you have to call someone. So we actually have a battery device with cables so you can jumpstart your own car. We call them jump packs. And we at CES unveiled a new product, our CPP 8500, which is coming out in April. And so it's a little different. It's a small device, although it's very powerful to help jumpstart a car, that is easy to travel with. So you can actually keep the cables in your car, which is what I do, and then I travel with the unit itself, and it has inductive charging. So for example, when I'm at home, I have it with me sitting next to me on my table, and I can put my phone on it. So inductive charging means I don't have to plug the phone in to charge it. It just charges while it's sitting on top of the unit.
That's nice. Because it's, you know, I think everybody who had jumper cables in the old days, you were sort of at the mercy of having another vehicle there to help you. Having one of these in the trunk is perfect, or even in the back seat would be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we actually have one other product that wasn't at CES, but it's one of the products that everyone in the company knows I talk about a lot, because it's also a jump starter. But it has the ability to jump start the car from inside the car without having to plug into the battery. So you actually can plug the cable into the cigarette lighter and jump start your car that way. So if you think about Chicago today, if your car, if your battery doesn't start, who wants to go outside, open the hood, try to jump start a car? And so, again, we're trying to lean into how do we provide products that help consumers, and in some ways, things they never even thought about.
Back to the app, I want to talk a little bit about this, because it is kind of cool. I mean, you have an app that not only, you know, you can monitor your Escort or Cobra program or platform, but it gives you all this other information, too, that people would go elsewhere to find.
Yep.
Maps, safety information, all of that other data. It's kind of cool that you're keeping them in the family and not making them go elsewhere for that.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is provide more information in one place for consumers, and that is driver alerts, red light camera alerts, and as you were saying, maps. But the other thing we're doing is we're gathering data from all of our hardware devices. So if we have someone with a connected CB radio, they can get all the same alerts that someone has that has a radar detector, because the back end database is now sharing information. So if you think about all of our array of products and all of the information it's gathering, it now becomes one seamless universe for how we help consumers stay more informed.
I imagine, and I've seen pictures of some of these things, but if we could kind of paint a picture for our viewers or listeners, I'm imagining all of these products in one. So you have a camera, radar detector built into the same system, so you don't have several different devices, right?
Yeah. So, and I'll get a little ahead of my skis, but obviously that's where the direction's going.
Yeah.
So it's how do you provide a device on a hardware side that has more functionality so that it's not serving just one purpose? So we're trying to solve that in a couple of ways. So we'll have combination units that provide multiple functionality. And then we'll also have the apps that provide more of the information. So the combination is to really help users have better data from every, whether it's an app, whether it's from their CB, whether it's from their dash camera, whether it's from their radar detector.
How challenging is it to find the right price point, the sweet spot as it's been called, for these consumer products?
Yeah, it is challenging. It's always challenging because you're trying to understand the value to a consumer, and you know the art versus the science is what the value is today is not the same value that it is tomorrow. And so, you know, we do a lot of market research. So we talk to consumers. We try to understand what products are worth. What are people willing to pay? What are they willing to pay, not just for an individual product? You have to understand the category, the features that are important to them. Is there a different value for different feature sets? And what are the kind of the minimum entry points? So what are the features you have to have in all of your products? And then how do you differentiate them, both from each other and from the market at large?
As we said at the beginning of the interview, Cedar Electronics is an international company. Lots has been going on internet. Lots of news internationally. We've had tariff trade war going on. How have these things impacted your business?
You know, like most consumer electronic companies, we've been impacted by tariffs. There's a cost associated with it that, you know, impacts the company, it impacts our suppliers, it can impact consumers. And, you know, what's important is that we remain nimble so that we deal with what's happening and create solutions.
And we oftentimes on the program talk about how companies love to have a firm knowledge of what's coming. They don't like to have things surprise them. How important is that from your vantage point in the C-suite?
I would say my entire career, it's always been my biggest, I'll call it my bugaboo. So surprises just don't go over well because you have no way to create a plan for how to combat it, how to proactively manage through it. And now you have to be reactive instead of proactive. So surprises are always what keeps people up at night. When you have something that you know is happening, you have a chance to actually plan around it.
We also like when we have CEOs in to get their perspective on where we might be going. What do you see out there that you like in the economy? Are you concerned about anything? Are you hopeful? What are you hopeful about in the economy?
Yeah, so I'm hopeful for, I'll go micro for a minute. So for us as a company, I'm really hopeful. I feel really good about our strategy. I feel really good about the products that we're bringing to market that are on our roadmap. I feel really good about the strengthening of the partnerships we've done. So internally, I feel good. On a macro level, we've been growing as an economy for the last, maybe it's 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. So it tells you that it may be time for a correction. Mm-hmm. So on a macro level, I'm preparing for a correction. And I think most companies are.
Yeah. Let's talk about routines. Every once in a while, we'll have a CEO come in and I'll say, do you have a routine? How do you begin your day? Is there something that you bring to the job that you've developed? Like, for instance, we had somebody who goes and kayaks on the Chicago River every morning to get their head straight for the day. People like to make their beds in the morning. What is it as a CEO that you bring to work that helps provide the structure for the day going forward?
Coffee. So I would say the most consistent part of my routine is I love coffee. And you know, I'm one of those people, I eat throughout the day. So if there's certain things that if you ask people that they would say, they probably don't think about it, but there's very few times that I'm in a meeting that I don't have food. So I keep myself nourished. It tends to be healthy food.
Yeah.
I also do a lot of management by walk around. So I spend very little time in my office except for after hours. Most of the time I'm out talking to people, trying to learn.
Yeah.
I thrive on learning and educating myself. Every day I learn something new.
What has to be done? What needs to change to have more women in the C-suite, more women CEOs? As much as we like to talk about equality, there's a real big disadvantage there, isn't there?
Yeah, great question. I actually spend a lot of time thinking about that, and even just in the C-suite. And, you know, as women executives, we haven't done as good a job as I think we could, leaning into the organization, no matter which organization it is, to mentor the next generation. I think men have been much better about, you know, they find their mentees in companies and they help bring them along. And it's usually another male that they bring along. Mm. And I think it's our responsibility as women that we do the same thing for other women.
That's sometimes can be a challenge. Do you and people always ask us to ask the question, how do you get a CEO to become your mentor? What's the answer to that question if somebody's out there listening that wants you as their mentor?
Yeah, half of the battle is asking. Half the battle is just showing that you want to learn and work hard to really move up the ranks. You know, to be very candid, women have to play differently in the business world. And there are double standards. And we just have to acknowledge that, and we have to accept it. There are things, and being very candid, in my career, I've probably been called more names than if a man did the exact same things I do than a man would be called. So you have to have a tough skin, and you have to really just say, what am I trying to accomplish? And if you're doing the right things for the right reasons, and someone raises their hand and says, hey, can you work with me and help me? You know, as long as they have, and I'll be honest with you, this is male or female. If someone has the aptitude and the attitude and they want to learn and grow, I think as leaders, it's our responsibility to help them do that.
How important is it for your company to be in Chicago? Is there a benefit to having a headquarters here in the city?
So there's not a benefit, but this is our roots. And I think it's really important that you lean into your roots. There's a long history of Cobra being here, and Escort's now part of the family. We also have a very large facility in Westchester, Ohio. Those are both important locations. They're part of our DNA, and we've got to keep our DNA in our products, in our teams, and in our communities.
Well, Gail, it's wonderful meeting you. We appreciate you being here today, getting to know you and getting to know more about Cedar Electronics. Come back anytime and see us, okay?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Gail Babbitt is the CEO of Cedar Electronics in Chicago, the company behind Cobra CB radios and Escort radar detectors. We're going to continue our conversation with Gail after the bell and post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. You can find more about Cedar Electronics at cedarelectronics.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. Statistics about crime and violent crime in the United States show that it is on the decline. Those stats have been showing that for quite a while. So why is there a public perception that it's getting worse and in some places is worse than it actually is? Joining us this morning, John Gramlich, a writer and editor at the Pew Research Center and the Fact Tank there. John, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being with us this early in the morning. The stats, as we go through them, show a really different story than the perceptions, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And this has been the case for a long time. In the U.S., Americans tend to think that crime is on the rise, even though, like you said, the statistics show it has been declining for most of the last quarter century.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those numbers. And we've seen, in some places, double-digit declines, right, in violent crime?
Yeah, nationally there has been huge declines in both violent crime and in property crime over the last, going back to the early 1990s. I mean, the crime rates on both the violent side and the property side have fallen by more than 50%. And that's been the case in recent years, too. You've seen a decline since the mid-2000s. Even though there was an increase, it hasn't been a steady decline. There have been year-over-year increases occasionally, but the long-term trend is definitely a big decline.
Then this perception, then the public perception, where does that come from? Is it we in the media who are doing a disservice to the public by not presenting these facts early and often as we should to them, or where are they getting this at?
You know, that's a good question. I'm sure to an extent it is what people see in the press. And one thing that is important to keep in mind is that crime is always a very localized experience. Obviously, in Chicago, there's been a lot of attention paid to violent crime and murder. And it could be that people don't really think about it in terms of national crime rates. So that when they're thinking about crime, they might be thinking what they just read in the paper about something that happened in their own city, you know, yesterday or the previous year. And they're not thinking about the fact that, you know, their own city might be an outlier in that sense. So to an extent, it just could be, you know, the questions that people are asked in surveys about crime are not what they're thinking of in terms of what they're seeing in their own community.
And talk to us a little bit about the surveys that have been done. I know we have notes here on Gallup survey, 18 of 22 Gallup surveys since 1993. They were asked about crime, and in each one of those, the public said they believe crime is up.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that Gallup and Center also ask the question in different ways. And so if Gallup, for example, they ask every year is crime up nationally compared to last year. And in 18 of these 22 surveys going back all the way to 1993, 60% or more of Americans have said, yes, crime is up nationally, even though, like we said, crime has been going down. But fewer people actually say crime is up when they're asked about their own community. So it's still a substantial portion. You know, there's still half of Americans or so believe that crime is up from one year to the next when they're talking about their own community. But it's interesting to me that it's consistently lower than the number who say the same thing about national crime. And so that does show you that people do think about crime differently when they're asked about their local community versus the country as a whole.
Yeah, and the perceptions that are gained from press coverage are especially significant for, let's say, a city like Chicago. We've had to deal with this with Chicago as the perception of it as being the murder capital of the U.S., but that's not really the case.
No, it's not, and it has not been the case for decades, actually. I mean, the difference there is just the difference between the raw number, for example, of murders that happen in Chicago versus the rate. I mean, Chicago has a lot of murders. It has more murders, in fact, than any city in the U.S. by a long shot. But, of course, Chicago is also the third largest city in the country. And so when you adjust for its large population, Chicago is not anywhere close to being the murder capital of the United States. It's well below other cities. It's got less than half the murder rate of St. Louis and Baltimore. And it's below other cities, too, Detroit, New Orleans. So the large population there means that it's not really the murder capital. But, of course, that's not to minimize the problems that Chicago has. I mean, in raw numbers, it does see a lot of violence every year. And so, you know, it's kind of a matter of perspective if you think that the problems there are being overblown. I mean, clearly there's a lot of violence, and it is an issue that probably needs to be addressed. But it's just not, you know, it's not when you adjust for the population, it's not quite as dire as maybe a lot of people have in mind.
John, is there an issue with the data that's coming from the FBI and the Justice Department on this that might be skewing people's perceptions? Does the data need to be presented differently, or is that pretty straightforward?
Well, the one thing to keep in mind about crime data is always that it's not exactly perfect. In the U.S., crime data has a lot of flaws, and one of the flaws is that it's very delayed. So we're into 2019 now, but we don't expect to get national crime data for 2018 until as late as October of this year. And so when you're thinking about crime and how it's covered in the press and how people understand it, there's a big delay. And so we often don't even know what the current situation is because things are so delayed. And then the other thing is that the crime statistics that we tend to focus on are reported crimes only, the crimes that are reported to police. And what we know from surveys is that many people don't report crimes to police. In fact, the majority of crimes don't get reported to police. Many crimes do, such as car theft or, you know, murder is a pretty easily trackable crime because it's the most serious one. But other crimes like assaults and burglaries and theft are very common and often not reported to police at all. So the picture you're getting about crime is far from a perfect one.
Yeah, and as you dive into the data, at least for me, one of the more concerning things, aside from the rate of crime, is the rate at which crimes are solved. The data shows that is a huge problem, that the clearance rate is low everywhere.
Yeah, and that's another thing that's very localized from city to city. It can be very low in some places, especially for violent crimes. I mean, there are some places in the United States, where, you know, even fewer than half of murders are solved. And the overall picture is most crimes are actually not reported to police, and most of those that are reported to police are not eventually solved. And so really, you're looking at about a quarter of all crime that actually takes place in the United States being both reported to police and being solved in the end.
So what do we do with all of this information? Is public policy being impacted by the perception, or is it vice versa?
That's a good question. I think that there is probably some impact on public policy and the perception of rising crime. I mean, you always, you know, during the 1990s and afterwards, you had a lot of politicians running on this tough on crime, you know, campaigns lasting well into the present day, even though, as we said, crime has been falling. So there is probably a policy impact on, you know, on the difference between these perceptions and what's actually happening out there.
What kinds of questions would your dream research survey on crime include if you had to set one up?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would love to dive in more deeply personally to the reasons why people think that crime is up. Like you said at the beginning of the beginning of the segment, I'd love to know why people are thinking that crime is so bad. And one thing that's hard to get at sometimes is the number of crimes or the volume of crime versus the type of crime. When you ask people, is crime bad? They might not be thinking of it in terms of is crime, you know, is there more crime? They might be thinking of the nature of the crime. They might be thinking of, you know, drug-related crime, gun crime. We don't know exactly, and we can't really know until you really probe the question of what people have in mind. So the more questions you can ask, the more follow-up questions you can ask to get at this question of why they're misperceiving what's happening, I'd love to know that.
Yeah, same here. John, great conversation. Thanks for being with us again this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Gramlich, a writer and editor for Pew Research Center's Fact Tank blog. You can find more online at pewresearch.org, and make sure you follow John on Twitter at John Gramlich.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later, 99 points lower on Dow futures this morning. That's more than a third, nearly a half a percent on the S&P, more than a half a percent on the NASDAQ. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A chilly morning that apparently will get colder as the week wears on. What will it do to markets? Well, it could impact livestock markets because it'll be harder to put gains on both cattle and hogs in this kind of weather. But quickly going back to last Friday, soybeans hit a two-week high. Concerns over the Brazilian soybean crop that seems to be growing smaller day by day. And at the end of the day, Friday, the March soybean contract was up 7.5 cents a bushel at 923.5. March corn gained 3.25 cents for the day, ending at 380.25. And March wheat ended the week at $5.21 a bushel. That was down 0.5 cent for the day on Friday. Livestock futures, hog futures down 2.33% in the Friday trade because of lack of an increase in Chinese imports of U.S. pork. February lean hogs ended down $1.45 a hundredweight for the day. Cattle futures were mixed. Nearby live cattle contracts firming. Feeder cattle contract for March ended 70 cents lower at 143.62. Stay warm. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. For Monday, January 28th, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is out today, as well as the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey. It's a busy day for earnings as well, including Illinois-based Caterpillar. Last quarter, the industrial giant's profits per share exceeded analyst expectation, but you may remember the company gave some disappointing guidance, saying costs were rising because of tariffs. So we'll be interested to see Caterpillar's earnings today. Also on the list, Whirlpool Corporation and Graco. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, consumer confidence numbers tomorrow, Case-Shiller Home Price Index, We'll get earnings from Apple and Verizon and Harley-Davidson as well. Wednesday, it is the Fed rate decision. By the way, the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, begins its meetings tomorrow. They'll announce their rate decision on Wednesday. Earnings from AT&T, McDonald's, Boeing, Microsoft, Facebook, and Tesla on Wednesday. Earnings from Amazon, GE, and UPS on Thursday. And the jobs report is coming on Friday. Just some of the things that could move the markets through the week and today on this January the 28th.